Okay, we're heading stateside now and speaking to Martin Taylor, Radio My Love, My Passion. And we say good morning to you, actually, over there, Martin. How are you?
Good morning, good afternoon, good afternoon. It's Marlin, M-A-R-L-I-N.
Taylor. Yes, not Martin, but
glad
Marlin.
Glad to be with
yeah.
you.
Whereabouts in America are you this morning?
Well, I'm in Silver Spring, Maryland, which is I'm about 10 miles from the United States Capitol building in Washington.
Oh, wow, fantastic. And it's a nice place to live, is it, where you are?
Well, it's not bad. There are a lot worse places in the world and in America. I'm originally from Pennsylvania, north of Philadelphia. Back, we like to say, where George Washington and his troops crossed the Delaware in 1776 to fight the British. That's where I come from, but that's a lot of history.
It seems to me, when I speak to people in America, that a lot of people move around in America. There's a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I live in California, but I'm from Boston, or I live in Texas, but I was from Colorado originally. Does anybody stay where they were born?
Well, I don't know. It seems like, especially in broadcasting, you go where the opportunities are.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that probably is not in the same city where you grew up or the same city where you may be working. I've lived all the way from here, what we call the Northeast Corridor, which is sort of a railroad name, but I've lived between all the way from here to Boston and back over the past, 50-some years. Although right now I'm 82, so anyway.
You're doing okay then, aren't you?
It's been a good life. It's been a good life, yes. That's why I decided I needed to get in print what I've experienced over the years. Maybe it'll be of interest to someone, maybe not. We'll find out.
Well, I mean, was it quite an interesting exercise to start going back over your life again and to look at some of the things you've been involved with in your life? Must have been quite interesting to go back.
Yes, definitely.
So, really, I mean, again, you've already given your age away, so I'm not going to really do that anymore, but you actually started, I suppose really after the Second World War was your discovering in musical recordings and so on, was it?
Right,
school age, I suppose.
Yes, I was, I actually discovered phonograph records probably somewhere during the war years.
Yeah.
Really, right after the war, I guess my mother realized how much I loved music and loved everything, sounds that came out of a box. And as soon as the war was over and she could afford it, she got me my own radio, and that became what I call my love affair with radio, broadcasting and programming, which continues to this day. Although things are, in many ways, in America, aren't as good as they were, you know, going back 10, 20, 30 years, because we have too many stations and too few owners.
I was going to ask you about that.
That's the problem in America.
Because here in Spain, we're broadcasting in English, and there's a set amount of radio stations that are here to an English-speaking audience. But my experience from the UK, there's quite a lot of online radio stations now, and I suppose there's more radio stations in the UK than there's ever been. But in America, there seems to be a radio station on every corner of the street.
Well, there is, and as I say, there are really too many, and but we've got two, you know, the ownership is in too few hands, really, and they're basically money people, and it's too much. How cheap can we do it and get away with it? And my success is tied to, it's been a philosophy I guess I grew up with. I don't know where it came from, but my philosophy in all my years in broadcasting, which as my book says, spanned 60 years, the listener has been the number one concern.
Mm.
What is best and what is interest of interest to the person out there? It doesn't care. It doesn't matter what kind of music I like, but although I've been involved pretty much in music that I like all these years, but if it's a particular song, I like it, but it's not right for the mass listener that I have, whether I have 10,000 listeners or a million listeners, I'm not going to program it if it's not right for them.
Yeah.
They're the number one priority. That's why stations where I had control or was involved deeply in management, we held down the number of commercials, looking out for them. To me, that's always been the key to success.
Well, let's go back a little bit to the early days, and then we'll maybe talk again a little bit about the situation of radio in America at the moment.
Right.
So what sort of music was grabbing your attention at that time?
Well, I would say after, right, when I first got the radio, other than listening to drama and various things, I guess the pop songs of the day were my favorites through those first several years of listening to radio. There was a period of time, I guess, in the early 50s where I listened to a fair amount of country music, which is, if anybody's familiar with country music, my love of country music would be in the days of Hank Williams Sr. Not Hank Williams Jr. Well, or the third or whatever.
I've got to say, I prefer Hank Williams Sr. To Hank Williams Jr. No offense if you're listening, but... So, that would have been the early days of, Jim Reeves and people like that, and many, many others starting off on that country scene, yeah.
Right.
And what about the likes of Bing Crosby during the wartime period and 1930s and 40s and so on?
That would have been that would have been in there, and it's in there as well. I listened to a lot to a station which to me is a great name in history, WNEW in New York City, which played the pop songs of the day through the 40s and into the early 50s before they lost their way. They had a DJs that were very, you know, very intelligent and talked about the music, and they're almost a legendary station in American history.
I don't know how much
I listened to that, and then
No, sorry to cut in. I don't know how much you know about UK radio, but kind of late 50s, early 60s, the BBC was still playing older music, and with this kind of rock and roll coming in and so on, it was. You may have heard of Radio Caroline and pirate radio stations that were broadcasting off the coast of the UK.
Definitely.
And they were really getting their kind of key and their cue from American radio.
Yes, definitely, yes.
And so that was, and the American radio stars were coming over to the UK to be on these radio shows. And so I suppose really the American radio really did influence the UK so much in the 1960s.
Right. It took the BBC a while to catch up.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. And they did catch up eventually.
Right.
So how did you first get into radio then? Because a lot of people want to get into radio, but it's kind of like Catch-22. You can't really do radio until you have experience, and you don't have experience until you do radio.
Well, so. I was very fortunate in a couple, as I say, To me, you know, and I have nothing against going to college, and I don't, you know, object if a person is going to benefit from college. I like to say, as I said in my book, my college education came from my Philco table model radio, which cost my mother $19.40. My listening to all kinds of stations, all kinds of programs, just an intuitive sense that I was blessed with is what gave me my understanding of what to program and how to do it. I got into radio by basically finally getting up the courage, very introverted, very shy, but I went to a little old station in Trenton, New Jersey on a Saturday afternoon and walked in on the DJ and started hanging out with him. They decided they were shortly after that they got a contract. They were going to do a what we called a remote broadcast from a car dealership, which back in the old days was big in this country. The station was so antiquated it didn't have the equipment to effectively do the broadcast. So knowing that I had some gear and was interested not only in programming but in technical things, if I could provide the missing needed equipment, I had the job to engineer the broadcast, which I did. And that's how I got my first job. From that, it segued into doing weekend, what we called board operators with a very little bit of announcing. After that, I got drafted in the U.S. Army. Eventually was set to sent to an outpost called Thule Air Force Base in Greenland, which is 750 miles north of the Arctic Circle. For a year's time. And they had very few people there that had any understanding of radio programming. They'd take the Air Force would take a guy with a radio equipment repair MOS, you know, military occupational specialty, and send them to the radio station. Well, anyway, I was there as part of the Army, but they finally let me go to the station, and that's where I really did more air work there than almost anywhere else in all my career. I became what we called, used to call here, the night jock, doing, you know, a top 40 DJ show on our main station. And, you know, I did have an audience because we had old 10,000-11,000 people on the base there in Thule at the time. So out of that, I came back to the States and came out of the Army, and my first full-time job in radio, 1961, two men who were engineers, one of which is still living and I communicate with him regularly, had gotten a permit to build a small FM station here in suburban Washington, just a few miles from where we currently live. And they didn't have much money. They built everything on the cheap, and I didn't cost much, but I wanted to be in radio, and they gambled on me. And I became the station's only full-time employee, and I had the knack for programming the music they wanted to play, which was primarily classical with some light pop material. We were the first FM stereo station Wow. In the Washington area in 1961.
And that, 2 days that, later, that was quite amazing, wasn't it? I mean, FM was really revolutionary at the time.
Yes, yes. So that's where I got my start. 2 years later, I got hired to do another startup in Philadelphia, based on the fact that I had been part of the startup operation here. Another engineer had gotten a permit for a station in Philadelphia. And there, along with a fellow who got hired to be sales manager, I was program director and station manager, we started what is now known as the Beautiful Music Format.
Fantastic.
We did that there, and that was really my stepping stone to my image and reputation and move up the ladder in broadcasting, because I created a whole different sound to what was known as easy listening or good music then, now more beautiful music, and that's what really caught the audience's fancy. And from there, you know, step by step, I ended up managing a sick New York City FM station known as WRFM, and we took it from the ratings at number 23 up to number 5 in 7 months, basically with word-of-mouth advertising and playing the right music and the right programming that appealed to the audience.
Yeah. I've got to ask you a couple of questions. One is, why love radio, why not television? What's the difference for you?
I don't know. I guess I've always been more of a sound person. I liked television, watching it some in the early days, and still watch probably a fair amount, but not a lot. I dabbled in video production in the 1980s when I was bored and needed something else to do, and I don't know. I guess it was too complex, too much involved, and you know, I'm a sound person, and that's where my skills are, in taking sound and you know, and putting them together and making them, you know, the listener happy.
Do you think there's an intimacy that comes with radio which doesn't come with television?
Well, you know, you're creating radio. You're creating a theater of the mind experience, as an old term I'm sure you know well. You know, you let the listener in his head create what's going on and what is to be visualized, where you have the actual pictures, television, and, you know, one of my early favorites was a wacko guy named Ernie Kovacs. I don't know if the world ever heard of him.
No. Well, I didn't.
Not, but he did television in the 50s and some movies and managed to kill himself while drunk and driving too fast in the 1960s. He was good on radio, but he excelled on television because he created a lot of early visual effects that were very interesting that, you know, this was long before the digital technology when you could create almost anything. He managed to do it with the few tools that were available to television at the time. So anyway, I don't know. That's my sense about things. I just feel, you know, more comfortable in the audio side.
With all your experience, and we're not going to have time to go through all the different stations that you've been involved with in the past, it seems to me with that you're talking about beautiful music there, that more so in the US, and it's coming now into the UK with radio, is kind of genre orientated radio. So you'd have a country music radio station, you'd have a classical music station, and really that's starting to come in a big way now in the UK, where we'd have like a 70s music station or a 60s music station. When did that really start? Was that part of the beginning of it, that kind of beautiful music that you were bringing in?
Well, it was being done in a format in various ways going back, you know, well into the 1950s, but it didn't really have a cohesive form. Everybody did it differently. But I would say as radio, as more stations came on the scene, television was beginning to bleed, people away from radio. So radio then, even the 50s, I guess really the beginning of rock and roll, in the mid 50s, and was sort of the genre, you know, beginning I can't think of the word anyway. It brought about the top 40 format.
Yeah.
You know, when Elvis and some of those other artists came in, and a couple of people here, Gordon McLendon is one name, got the concept, let's take the best pop songs of the day and just play them over and over and over and over. You know, 40 songs is the only spread of the format, you know, around the clock.
Yeah.
Until you added a couple more next week and took a couple away. And that sort of was beginning. And as more and more stations, especially FMs, came on looking for a niche that they could fill and get some radio ratings and get a solid audience, it just sort of evolved over the years. But I would say it probably reached its peak, maybe 70s and 80s.
Yeah,
is where it became more and more specialized.
Well, unfortunately, we're out of time. I just wanted to ask you just quickly about the way in which radio is at the moment in the US. You said that it's so prolific, the amount of stations, and a lot of syndication seems to take place, isn't it? You know, I listen to a show called Coast to Coast AM, and that's syndicated on so many different radio networks across the States and across Canada. Is that the way? Has it always been like that, or is that quite new?
No, well, there's always been a fair amount of that. Frankly, there's too much of it today. There's a lot, you know, once they find a good talent in a particular genre, they'll syndicate it across many things. It's good in a sense, because it improves the quality of a particular station sound, but it also takes away the localness.
Mm.
And over we talk about the heart of radio, the real radio success was live and local.
Yeah, and that's
and
happening in the UK
as well.
We're
losing more and more of that as that becomes, because the modal, you know, the owners that own hundreds of stations, all they want to do is make it cheaper, plus they have such a debt load they have to cover that it's almost impossible to make a profit after they've paid the debt service for the month.
Yeah.
And then we have satellite radio, which quickly is where I spent my last 15 years before I retired at the end of 60 years span in the industry. I created three different formats there. They hired me to do big band 1940s music. 2 years later, I put together the beautiful music format for them, which they hadn't really wanted initially. 2 years later, we created and launched out of listener these are all subscriber demand channels.
Yeah.
We created a Southern gospel music format, which if somebody doesn't know what Southern gospel is, I call it a cousin to barbershop barbershop singing, because it's based on four-part harmony.
Yeah.
So I created three successful formats in the early days. The companies are now merged, of course, in 2008. Those three channels are still on the air and very popular. So I feel that I had a good run. It's been a wonderful life. I have been blessed and privileged to be in broadcasting all these years.
Marlon Taylor, thank you for coming on Talk Radio Europe here in Spain. And the book's called Radio, My Love, My Passion. It's available if you go to our website, which is tre.radio, and you can click on the bookshop banner there and order the book. And I'm sure we've only just skimmed the surface. Marlon, thank you very much, and wish you all the very
best
with the book.
Appreciate the opportunity to speak to the good folks in Spain.
Lovely. Thank you, Marlon.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.